Hello, Morris.
Hello.
Hello, Morris.
At last we're through.
Yes, hello. Okay, sorry about the confusion.
What's going on?
Yes, few technical hiccups.
Oh, I see.
But we're there now.
Good.
So, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And I'm talking to Captain Morris Seddon. I believe you're in Datchet at the moment, Morris.
Datchet, indeed, yes.
Yeah. And you've just come back from Reading.
Yes, that's right.
Now, can I ask you what that was to do with, or is this some secret?
Over and done with. We don't want to damage things in advance, you know what I mean. But it's done successfully. There was someone who wanted to give me a present of an unwanted 15-year-old, but still in working order, out of use, deep freeze chest.
Right.
And it was a case of organizing the collection of this thing and finding the place where it was, having been given a wrong address and all this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But at length it unraveled itself with a lot of raveling, and it's back here and so am I.
Right. So, did you get it for nothing, or...?
Yes, it cost me... Well, no, it cost me £20 in transportation, you see.
Yeah.
But the thing itself, it didn't cost anything.
Right. And what are you going to do with it?
Well, initially I'm just going to store it. It's always useful to have a spare.
Yeah.
I find that they're not only useful as freezers, indeed they're most useful, but if one doesn't want to use them as a freezer, they make an excellent storage chest.
Oh, yeah.
Out-of-doors storage chest.
Yes.
Because they're weatherproof, and they, because of the thermal insulation, the temperature tends to be rather more constant than in other containers. And one can store all sorts of things. And as this is just a very old cottage, as you know, and not very big, it's always useful to have a little external storage space.
Yes. You've already got various deep freezers, haven't you, in the garden?
Indeed, yes.
And what do you keep in them mostly?
Well, some of them are in working order, and they contain stores of food. One must remember it may be that a part of this stems from my partly German background.
Yeah.
I think in England they were so fortunate that they never really experienced the war. But it is a fact that in Germany there was a terrible food shortage and terrible problems of food supply and storage after the war was over.
Yeah.
And many people died of famine.
Yeah.
And I suppose I've learned something from that.
Right.
And so in case of any shortage of food, at least there's a good store which will last quite a long time.
Yeah, so it's a sort of siege mentality, is it, do you think? Would you call it a siege mentality, or...?
Siege, you could say that, yes, that's rather a good description.
Yeah.
Yes.
And where do you get the food from that you keep in the deep freezers?
Well, that was the next thing. I'm a great believer in killing two birds with one stone. So we then went on to Lidl, L-I-D-L. Do you know it?
I do, yes.
And
It's
an excellent source.
Very cheap, isn't it?
Very cheap, and nevertheless, in most cases, very good food of totally unheard-of makes that we don't know in England at all.
Yeah.
But they're absolutely fine. And we bought quite a good supply of food, which was then put in the freezer, which just acted as a storage box, and took it home.
Right.
But, of course, all this took quite a lot of time.
Yes, yes.
But it's now over and done, thank goodness, and what a relief that it is.
Yep. Okay. And you I think you've got sort of food stored in the deep freezers, which goes back several years, haven't you?
Oh, yes, indeed. Many years.
Yeah.
Many years.
And does it never have a sort of sell-by date? Is there never a point
at which... These theoretical things, you know, which I find are not relevant at all. A properly working freezer will keep food almost indefinitely.
Right.
The vast majority of cases.
Yeah.
There may be just a few items which deteriorate a tiny bit, but very, very little and very, very few of them.
Right.
So I'm quite happily and frequently eating things that are marked with sell-by dates that are 5 and 6 years old.
Right.
And with no negative consequences whatever.
Yeah. Okay. And how are the dogs these days?
Sorry?
How are the dogs?
Oh, the dogs are very well, and they send you their love. Woof, woof, woof. Yeah,
thank you.
They were very excited when I got back, of course.
Yes. Yeah. And do they also feed from the deep freezes? Are you sort of...
Yes, indeed. The dogs' food is also kept in deep freeze, and there I'm rather fortunate. I have a working arrangement with butchers who give me meats which are a little bit out of date, you know. I eat very little meat for myself, personally. Mm. But they give me quite large quantities of perfectly serviceable, albeit out of sell-by date, meats, scraps.
Yeah.
Which, in general, are of a kind that they can't sell. They're the type of meat that... I'm no expert on meats, but there are certain sorts of meats that are sold for human consumption.
Yes.
There are other perfectly good meats, perhaps from the same animal, but a different cut, which for some reason of convention, I think, just are not fed to the humans.
Yeah.
So the dogs get those.
And how many dogs do you have at the moment?
Well, for security reasons, I never divulge the number.
Hmm.
Suffice it to say it's a very large number.
Yes.
Very much larger than it would be if it was a normal household.
Yes. Are there more than 10?
Well, I don't discuss the numbers at all.
Okay.
It's a large number.
Yes.
And they're both very, very loving companions and, in addition, very, very good deterrents.
Yeah.
And I think I've told you that I have a terrible problem here. I live at the midpoint, halfway on the connecting road, between two strongholds of what the local people call didicoys.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how it's spelt. I've never seen it written. I can only guess.
Yes.
And when I inquired 51 years ago when I came here, what is didicoy, the answer I received is, well, they're a sort of gypsy, you know, but not a proper gypsy, you see, and I neither knew nor saw.
Uh-huh.
Still don't understand. But then it was explained to me further that what they call proper gypsies, allegedly, are in general of fairly good character and don't do anything untoward. However, I was told, the didicoys are quite different. They earn their living not by working, but by stealing and similar nefarious acts.
Yeah.
Because the gypsies are very cunning about this, the semi-gypsies, they manage to transfer the blame onto the proper gypsies, so I was given to understand,
uh-huh.
who then quite unjustly get the reputation for being dishonest.
Uh-huh.
And so it is. Well, anyway, I'm halfway between these two establishments. One is a caravan site, 200 meters to the south, and the other, 200 meters to the north, is a group of, a councillor friend tells me, at least 35 former council houses, which are now inhabited by former caravan dwellers.
Uh-huh.
And I'm at the halfway point, and you can imagine what goes on.
Mm-hmm. And that's why you have the dogs?
Partly because I love dogs anyway. I would always have some, a few. But the reason for the number is because of the deterrent effect.
Yeah.
Very great.
But isn't it must be quite expensive to feed them?
Sorry?
It must be quite expensive to feed them.
Not at all.
No?
Because the food that comes to me is food for which I'm not charged.
Right.
I only have to pay for the transportation.
Yeah.
I have to get someone I know to go with the vehicle and bring the thing here. Bring the stuff here.
Yeah.
Then it goes into a freezer.
Right. And what's perhaps you could... I mean, your neighbour, I believe, complains repeatedly about the noise of the dogs barking.
Yes, I have one most unpleasant neighbour, sad to say, and other delightful neighbours.
Yeah. But it's quite bizarre because you actually live under you're under the flight path, aren't you, from Heathrow, where the planes are sort of approximately what they come over your house about 20 yards above every sort of 1.5 minutes or something.
Well, they come over anything from every 35 seconds up to, I think, 1.75 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
They're at it the whole time.
Yes.
And the noise is absolutely terrible. So it's quite impossible to converse out in the open air,
yeah.
Or you have just to stop the conversing when the next airplane comes.
Yeah.
Then as soon as it's disappeared far enough away, you can start talking again. But within a few seconds, you have to stop again because the next airplane comes.
Right, right. Well, we were, you know, my partner and I, Sandra, we went to the south of France this year.
Oh, yes.
And we were staying in a place called Menton. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Menton, I've often heard of it. I don't know it.
Well, it's right on the Italian border.
Oh, yes.
And it's the last town in France on the coast before you cross the border. And then the first Italian town that you come to is called Ventimiglia.
Ventimiglia, indeed. Well, I did motor along that coast road all the way down to Rome. 1950-something.
Yeah.
So, Ventimiglia, yes, indeed, I remember well.
So that was in your, I presume that was in your Rolls-Royce?
Now, I don't remember. It was in various different vehicles. You see, at that time, my sister, Cecilia, who sadly is now long dead, lived partly in Rome and partly in Sorrento, and this she did over a period of 43 years.
Yep.
So I went out every year at least once, sometimes twice or more, and would stay with her at some length.
Mm-hmm.
I took the Rolls, yes, I did indeed, on at least one occasion, possibly more. But of course that was rather expensive because the Italian petrol is costly.
What sort of Rolls-Royce is it, or was it?
Oh, well, it's a 1934 Phantom II.
Right, right.
And it's a seven-seater limousine.
Yeah, and you still have it in a garage, don't you?
I still have it stored.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a pure dinosaur in these times.
Yeah.
It's quite unthinkable to run it. It does about 6 miles a gallon.
Yeah.
So at the present day cost, it would be one would have to be either a wastrel or a millionaire to use it.
Yes. And didn't it have a television in the back?
Yes, it had a television in the back. That was quite interesting because at that time it was very, very rare indeed to come across a television in a car.
Right. Well, as I was saying, we went to Menton. And we got the train from Menton to Ventimiglia, which is just about 2 miles or so inside the Italian border.
Yes.
And do you remember Ventimiglia at all?
I remember it as a name more than anything else.
Well, it's a curious place. I mean, part of it is extremely old-fashioned, a bit like those sort of pictures you see of Naples, you know, with sort of washing hanging from across streets and that sort of old town. And we went in search of a restaurant, and we couldn't find anything in the old town. And so we went to back into the new town of Ventimiglia and found a restaurant overlooking the beach.
Yes.
So Sandra and I were sort of, it seemed like a reasonable restaurant right on the edge of the beach, and our table was sort of looking out onto the beach to the sea beyond.
Yes.
And we ordered some food. And when we had sat down, the people at the next table, I noticed that there was one. They just looked like sort of French tourists, quite average-looking people. But one chap, he was sitting with his chin slumped onto his chest.
Oh.
And he didn't look particularly well. And after a while, I said to Sandra, I said, "Well, did you notice that man at the next table who didn't look very well?" And she said she hadn't noticed, but as we turned, we sort of turned and looked round at him, and he still didn't look well, and we carried on eating. But after a while, there was this sort of unmistakable noise of sort of liquid hitting the floor, and we turned round and noticed that the man was just casually being sick on the floor.
Oh, God.
And this sort of continued. He just continued to sort of vomit slowly, and sort of three or four times in succession, until there was a sort of pool of liquid under the table, and you could clearly see everything that he'd eaten.
Good grief.
And the people at the table just didn't bat an eyelid. They just sort of, they just let this man be sick all over the floor. And the waiters also pretended, they just looked away as though nothing was happening.
Oh, really?
And then eventually a waiter sort of came along with a tablecloth and just threw it over this pile of whatever one calls it, effluent or something, or vomit. And they, after a while, they just paid and left.
With the vomiting man?
Yes, they took him with them, but there had been no attempt whatsoever to either get him to the toilet or call a doctor or anything. I was just, it was an extraordinary sort of incident, really.
How strange.
Yeah.
I've never heard of anything like it.
No. I just wondered if you'd had any, I don't know what your own experience of eating in Italy was.
Well, I mean, occasionally we would go out to a restaurant somewhere, a modest one, I found the food was very good on the whole.
Yeah.
And not terribly expensive, really, all things considered. And I never saw anybody vomit ever once.
Right.
So it was presumably a fairly rare event.
Well, yes, I've never experienced anything like it in a restaurant before, or since.
It's just possible, you see, that this man had some chronic disease, and that he was a regular visitor there, and every time he came, he had a vomit. I can only guess that. That's the possible explanation.
I suppose that's possible, but you'd imagine if it was a regular event that he wouldn't vomit on the floor, that they might have a bucket ready for him.
Well, that's a very good point. Yes, one would hope so, wouldn't one?
Yes.
I think it's very bizarre, I must say.
Well, it was very strange. I mean, at first we laughed in sort of shock, really, but then afterwards we thought it was fairly outrageous and wondered why the staff hadn't done something like sort of putting a screen around the table or something, but they were quite sort of matter-of-fact about it. And he didn't seem to be drunk.
How strange.
Yes.
Very, very odd indeed. Well, it's not a very good renommé for the food of the restaurant.
Absolutely not, no.
Could it be that the food was bad, that it had gone off?
Well, it's possible, but he seemed to be ill before he'd started eating, but perhaps he just couldn't hold it down. But you could see quite clearly that he'd had tagliatelle with octopus.
That he had what?
Tagliatelle with octopus.
Oh, tagliatelle with octopus.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, I don't know.
No.
Yes. Very, very strange.
Yeah.
Possibly the octopus didn't agree with him.
Quite likely, yes. But
it is said that when certain sorts of fish get even slightly off, they're actually dangerous.
Yes, that's true.
Now, whether that includes octopus, I don't know.
Mm.
It's principally said of shellfish.
Yes.
That one has to be terribly careful not to eat shellfish that's gone off in any way.
Yes, yeah. Have you ever had a similar problem? Or?
Never.
Well, I remember you used to be quite... You never used to like eating chili, did you?
Sorry?
You didn't used to like eating chilies.
I never liked anything that was very strong, you know.
Mm.
And if it was very strong, then I would tend not to eat it.
Yeah.
But chili in mild quantities and well diluted with other things, I do appreciate and do use.
Yeah.
In fact, it's medicinally good. It stimulates the circulation.
Yeah.
But it's a question of degree. It has to be quite mild.
Yes.
And
I remember when we went to Wales with you once years ago.
Yes.
And you made a sort of quite an eccentric meal out of scrambled eggs, to which you added numerous dried herbs and garlic and even a touch of arsenic, I think.
Even a touch of what?
Arsenic.
Arsenic?
Yes.
Well, oddly enough, arsenic also is medicinally beneficial, but in tiny quantities.
Yeah.
I don't remember using arsenic in anything I cooked, but you may well, if you say so, I'm sure you'll be right.
Yes, I remember you extolling the virtues of it. You sort of suggested that it was quite good in moderation.
What was?
That it was good in moderation.
Yes, indeed. Yes, but all the other things you described are absolutely typical of the way I cook.
Yeah.
Always do that. Lots of herbs.
Yes, and you blend it all together with scrambled eggs.
That's right. Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So you get something like an omelette coming out.
Yes. Yes.
But with a great variety of herbs, greater than usual.
Right. Well, Thank you very much, Maurice, for joining us this afternoon.
Not at
all. I think we'll just play out with some music by Israel Quellet. So this is, you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and our guest today was Captain Maurice Seddon. All right, Maurice, thank you very much.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Your program, every good fortune.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Les bouts fissures, les croupissures, la chair fraîche et joyeuse, l'esprit engrené, gangrené. La bigarrure, la décharnure. La charnière, la bicharnure. Les ormus, les capus. Les calures, les chartrures. Les peluches, les greluches. Les roulures, les goulures.
Les moulures, les moulues. Les pin-up, les pinures. Les rainures, les rainures.
Les mamelures, les poilures.
Les pressures, les baisures.
Les léchures, les pourléchures.
Les voutures, les foutures.
Les capsules, les glandules.
Les globules, les copules.
Les branlures,
les gesticules, les testicules,
les rites, les rues, les prurites,
les calculs, les tapes,
les créatures, les aventures,
les ouvertures, les avortures,
les merdures, les perdures,
les poissures, les viscures,
les crachures, les bavures.
Les ablures,
les jactures, les éjectures,
les fures, les futures,
les blablatures, les déblatures,
les parjures, les injures,
les écritures, les gravissures,
les graffissures, les graffitures,
les grattures, les griffures,
les trassures, les trichures,
les rasures, les obscures.
Les vues, les bévues.
Les imbus, les rompus.
Les murs, les sûrs.
Les baudruches, les autruches.
Les carrures, les pavanures.
Les gantures, les coutures.
Les allures, les fourrures.
Les postures, les impostures.
Les pelures, les galures.
Les tentures, les tapissures.
Les plâtrissures, les flétrissures.
Les jolivures, les enluminures.
Les courbures, les croupures.
Les écusses, les écus,
les écuisses,
la roture, la rue, la rioture.
Les masures, les crevures.
Les brûlures, les blessures.
Les gelures, les gerçures.
Les froidures, les froissures.
Les serrures,
les rouillures, les roussures,
les ordures, les balayures,
les chiures, les oxyures,
les verbiges, les vermicoles,
les vermicoles,
les vermifuges.
Les vermicelles.
pelles, les vermicules, les pâtures, les pourritures, les brioches, les broches, les brochures, les fritures. Les détritures, les détritus, les étripures, les embrochures, les palures, les portures, les arrachures, les étrangures, les déchirures, les craquelures, les ossatures, les démembrures, les ossatures, les froissatures, les fossoyures, les calcinures.
Yes, on that rather crunchy note, we'll end Wavelength. Thanks to William English and Captain Morris Seddon for 30 minutes of fun, undoubtedly. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. In a short while, you know, matter of seconds, live from the Jean-Nic Mecquet Littlefield Concert Hall in UCL Berkeley. And then after that, we have Voice on Record, I repeat. This week, Sean Williams looks at recordings of the human voice in space, nonetheless. And then at 5 o'clock for half an hour, Art Monthly Monthly. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. Catch performances of boundary-defying music during the London International Festival of Exploratory Music, running from the 4th to the 7th of November at King's Place, London N1. For further information, visit lifem.org.uk. That's lifem.org.uk.
On the 9th, 10th and 11th of October, the Wire magazine is sucked into the East London venue, The Vortex, to present three theme nights of underground music, featuring Richard Youngs and Heather Lee Murray, The One Ensemble, Band of Holy Joy, Ghost Box, The Caretaker and Thomas Ankerschmidt, to name but a few. For more information, visit thewire.co.uk or vortexjazz.co.uk.
Spectrum 21. Four extraordinary concerts of new music by Iancu Dumitrescu, Anna Maria Avram, Jacinto Shelsey, Yanis Xenakis, and more. October the 12th to the 17th at The Warehouse in LSO St. Luke's. Featuring Hyperion Ensemble, Bergerson String Quartet, Talia Ensemble, Tim Hodgkinson, and Chris Cutler. For full details, visit festivalspectrum21.tripod.com. Spectrum 21, supported by Resonance 104.4 FM. Spectrum 21, four extraordinary concerts of new music by Iancu Dumitrescu, Anna Maria Avram, Jacinto Shelsey, Yanis Xenakis, and more. October the 12th to the 17th at The Warehouse in LSO St. Luke's. Featuring Hyperion Ensemble, Bergerson String Quartet, Talia Ensemble, Tim Hodgkinson, and Chris Cutler. For full details, visit festivalspectrum21.tripod.com. Spectrum 21, supported by Resonance 104.4 FM.
You're listening to Live from the Jean-Nic Mecquet Littlefield Concert Hall at Mills College on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Annie Lewandowski. This week's program features the music of composer and improviser Svetlana Voronina.